Let's talk briefly about graph databases. We know that it's not going to be a small part of the future data landscape. How do you see graph databases fitting into the evolving data ecosystem? How can large corporate users that are already managing massive relational data stores like consider graph structures for data? What's the pathway there? So how do you see the market and how do you see the pathway there?
I think the market is evolving and there are a lot of graph database vendors who are coming on board and each of them have their own strengths and weaknesses. And eventually there'll be market consolidation and you will know who the leaders are and you will say, hey, you know what? I want to work with these people. So let's say that you have picked your vendor. From a practitioner's perspective, for me, graph databases allow us to ascertain multi-level transitionary relationships. So what I mean by that is we all know the theory of transitivity, right? If A implies B and B implies C, then that implies A implies C. With graph databases, we can take this to a completely new level because if there are relationships, say in our alphabet, in the same example that I just used, you will be able to say that A implies Z, right? Because there are some intermediate relationship in those 26 alphabets. That is very, very important when you're looking at understanding customer behavior. Because when you're trying to find out why did a customer, and I give you a very specific example, why does a customer always buy 1,000 shares of Alibaba followed by 1,000 shares of Amazon, for example? That may not be readily apparent. So when you start looking at the relationship of data from the perspective of the ticker symbol, the stock symbol, which is AWS or Alibaba, you will start seeing relationships between them that, you know, one is following the other. And there are 10 cases of that happened in the last 3 months within your transactions. So those are insights that don't necessarily occur in a normal relational world because, you know, it's very difficult to get those because you have a separation of what a transaction is and a separation of what the entity is. Now, when we go through this whole exercise of saying, hey, we want to go down the path of graph databases, again, we start with models. We want to make sure that you build a simple model first. Start small. Say, you know, you want to start with customer and transactions or customer and products. When you come from a predominantly relational world, and this is different for different cloud vendors, but say, for example, on AWS, if you have a lot of relational data and you want to bring it into a graph database and you say you have your model built, you may have to sort of offload your data to like a block storage like S3 and then load the data from there into the graph model. And that's okay. I mean, you can do that. But I would say always in anything that we do new, we start small, have a nice, well-defined proof of concept. Then you have a much higher degree of success. You get the job done, you see the value, and then you can start building on it iteratively. So I'm a big believer in this whole iterative model where I say, you know, what can I show you in 2 or 3 weeks? Very small, well-defined, narrow scope. And then once we're done with that, then we can constantly build and evolve and expand the scope. And that's how eventually the system gets hardened and the system becomes stable and consistent. That's sort of my take on graph databases.
It's interesting. I see these trends towards NoSQL happening as well. And so there's this evolution that seems to be happening on the enterprise data warehouse where there's a NoSQL representation and there might be a graph representation and we may be querying and using different views or assemblies, data catalogs out of our sort of core data sets. And I'm curious, within that diverse environment, do you see enterprises embracing kind of an all of the above strategy? Or do you think most orgs kind of need to pick and stick with one approach to their data warehousing, sort of data aggregation, data hub approach and architecture? What's the right way forward for an enterprise leader trying to figure out of the different possibilities for the data future, where do we head?
Okay, I'm going to say something which probably I wouldn't have said 20 years ago. And I'm going to say, keep it wide open, open slate. You want to make sure that your architecture is built in a way such that you can change the backend database from relational to NoSQL to whatever else that comes tomorrow. And that should not matter. And that's the level of abstraction that you have to build into the code, into the software that you build. Now, like I mentioned earlier during this podcast, I believe that the time has come for us to use what is termed as fit for purpose data persistence, which means we have to get out of this mindset that I'm just going to pick one vendor, one database, and I'm going to put everything in it. Well, that's not going to work in the future. And the good thing about cloud computing is that a lot of the classic database vendors functionality has been democratized, which means that you have a choice now. You are not this is not a relationship where you're handcuffed for 10 years and you don't have a choice. You can't get out if it doesn't work. You can build your architecture in such a way that you use the right persistence layer for the right things because you want it fit for purpose, right? If you're going to do relationships, and let's say that you're going to do relationships between customer and transactions, then by all means, put it into a graph database because you need a graph database for that. And if you need something that is something where you have to deliver business objects for a mobile application to reduce the elapsed time of how long it takes for the application to render, then use a NoSQL database and render a business object in the form of JSON to the application. And if it's a matter of back to the system of record transactions, rows and columns and dates, characters and strings and numbers, then yeah, of course, use a relational database. But don't try to go say, okay, I'm going to have a bunch of audio files. I'm going to go stick it into a relational database. Will it work? Yeah, it'll work. Yeah, you can do it. But is it the right data persistence layer? Probably not. And I think that's where fundamentally we have to start looking at it. How do we leverage two things? One is how do we create a decoupled architecture, an abstracted software layer that is not dependent on what the database, so there's a hardware connection to any database vendor or layer or whatever. And the other thing is how much can I use a backend service without having to manage servers? And how can I get the job done quickly, whereby the persistence layer is durable, it is scalable, it is highly available, and if I need to go global, I can go global in minutes. So I think that is how I'd probably approach the problem. So keep an open, wide, clean slate with a whiteboard and, you know, with a erasable marker and say, today it is this, database X. Tomorrow we can go to database Y. Of course, absolutely can. There shouldn't be anything in the architecture that prevents you from doing that. So it's a very flexible architecture, if you will. The architecture for today, architecture du jour, uses NoSQL. Tomorrow, it could be using something else, and that's okay. We should be able to transition from NoSQL to that other database if we need to. And I think that's sort of the mindset that I have in building those kind of architectures.
It both limits risk at the same time as opens up possibilities. It limits the blast radius and contains the possibility that any new vendor change will blow up data operations, and also creates a whole new set of capabilities that wouldn't be possible without that modular and abstracted architecture.
Absolutely. And I think this is where, 20 years ago, when you talked to me in the relational space and said, I need HA, high availability and disaster recovery, that was a big deal. We had to build a secondary instance. We had to make sure that the DR was built in, you know, a location 1,000 kilometers away. We had to make sure that we had to ship the logs. We had to make sure that the logs got applied on the disaster recovery side. Today, it's a simple thing. It's a switch. Inside your create table statement, you can create a NoSQL data, a table, a global table, and that table can instantly get replicated to multiple parts of the world, and you don't have to do a thing. And rightfully so. Your core competency is not like hand-holding replication. Your core competency should be building functionality that enhances your customer experience in your industry. And that's where I think cloud computing has come a long way in taking all those things and doing the heavy lifting for us. I do not want to manage replication. I do not want to worry about disaster recovery as long as I've set up global tables. I'm done. And I think that's where fundamentally we have changed in how even data persistence occurs. We don't worry about, you know, is my system going to be up or down, or whether, you know, what happens if the entire Eastern Seaboard loses power? Not a big deal, because you have the other side coming up on the West Coast and it's up and running in seconds.